And welcome to another fun-filled episode of that 4NK podcast. Ari Rosenbaum here, as always, with Dan Venturi. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great today, Ari. Running around. I got a science fair tonight. I got my son's fourth birthday tomorrow. I got PJ Maxx at Nassau Coliseum on Saturday.
Oh, what?
So we're all set, man. PJ, we're ready to
what?
Go.
PJ what?
PJ Masks?
What's that?
So it's the concept is and you know, anyone with little boys would know this. It's probably a little past Jason's time. But it's a boy, it's two boys and a girl, and the concept is they turn into heroes at night and they fight villains. Now they've got the coolest equipment, the coolest cars in the world, and no one knows how they got it. They've got a hideout, they've got all this stuff in plain sight. But my little boy can't get enough of it. So
what channel is it on?
It is on Nickelodeon.
So they have a live. They have like a live show.
They do. They've got a live action at the Coliseum.
Yeah, like you know, they always, you know, Marvel superheroes and all that stuff. And...
Exactly.
Okay.
The worst one I've ever... So this is my second round with this, right? So I have old school. I've got a 14-year-old. Excuse me, a 15-year-old and a 9-year-old. And I've got my young guys. I got a 5-year-old and a 4-year-old. So they're new school. But the single worst one I've ever been, and you know, all due respect to figure skaters, was a Disney on Ice princess thing.
I did that twice.
Oh, God, that was so painful.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my cup of tea, but I remember the second time it was like right after the hurricane and we got decimated and, you know, the whole area by me got decimated and we're like, are you going to cancel the show? It was like literally like 2 weeks after the hurricane, and that's the Nassau Coliseum. They actually use that to hold people after the hurricane, and they actually held it and it was like empty. It was a really empty crowd. Maybe they had 5,000 people show up. It was pretty bad, but yeah, I was never a big fan of that. And that Disney princess phase didn't last very long.
Thank goodness for that.
It lasted for the first Disney trip, and the Disney princess gown was never to be seen again.
Yeah. I got one more little girl, so I'm sure she's gonna princess up here shortly, but we're not there yet.
And which gives me a nice segue to talk about Disney, because today, the day that we are actually recording this, we booked the venue for that very first, that 4NK National Conference. We are going to be at Disney Swan Hotel. I wanted to say casino, but there's no casino there. That's going to be at Disney World, March the 10th and the 11th, 2020. It's like the year we made contact or something, isn't it? That's 2010. Putting the fun in 4NK, it's going to be a national event, 2 days. It's for all our friends who are 4NK plan providers. We'll have more information soon about registration, the, you know, Disney discount tickets, the rooms options, and all that other kind of stuff within the next couple weeks. Of course, sponsorship opportunities. It's going to be a lot of fun. Not as serious as some of the other conventions. We'll be, you know, somewhat serious, but a little bit more dressed down. A lot more fun, more interesting things. You know, I already talked to some people about appearing at the event. So it's going to be something unique, something different. Bring the family along, because, of course, you know, March the 10th and the 11th, I believe, are Monday, Tuesday. Come Friday, bring the kids. You know, discount Disney tickets. I think they're going to be 30% off on, you know, the passes, the 3-day pass. And
one more time on that? Yeah. How much?
I think 30% off. The pricing is different because Disney now does, they don't do one pricing anymore. It's now based...
on demand, right?
Well, it's based on the calendar. So,
yeah.
You know, I think for that time of the year, I still think it's like 30% off.
Guys, 30% off on Disney tickets.
And yeah, we'll have opportunities to sign up, registration fees and all that. We'll do discounting prior to certain days and all that stuff. And, of course, for my friends on LinkedIn and Twitter, you'll see daily postings about the conference as well as the plan providers that are going to participate. Plan providers who are interested should always contact me. As they know from that 401k conference, people who sponsor don't feel like they got ripped off and don't feel like they, you know, were... you know, taking out a lot of money for these sponsorships. They're going to be a lot less than the other events that are out there, and it's going to be a lot of fun, interesting, and different, and, you know, we'll have more details as we get closer. We're only 11 months away, so we got to prepare and, you know, put it up on that website so that 401ksite.com will have further information about that. And talking about that 401k conference, right now I'm recording. By the time you hear it, Atlanta will be finished. So our next event will be in Kansas City, Missouri, Friday, May 3rd.
Which is also your birthday.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was younger, you know, it was, you know, more important, but I was never a big birthday fan. But, you know, there are worse places to be on my birthday on May 3rd. I've done it before. Criminal law exam, final exam was one birthday.
Albany, right?
Driving up into an Albany Union Conference for a client. That was a lot of fun. So Kansas City is going to be, you know, meeting Hal McRae. It's going to be a lot better than that. So that go to that 401ksite.com. There's going to be a game on May 2nd, but that's an afternoon game, so I don't think that we're going to get any people to attend. It's against the Tampa Bay Rays. Then we got June 14th in Colorado. Every attendee gets a ticket to the Rockies-Padres game, which will be a lot of fun. Then September 20th, we'll be in Cleveland, Ohio, at Progressive Fields. We'll have more information about the tickets for that game that night against the Phillies. We're probably, you know, Dan and I are certainly going to try to get to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's been a goal of ours.
Absolutely.
October 11th, Foxborough, Massachusetts, Gillette Stadium. November, we still have to book it. We're going to probably be at MetLife Stadium. Well, I got to figure out the dates because I don't need it to conflict with my daughter's bat mitzvah.
There you go.
And December 13th, Dallas, Texas. Well, Arlington, Texas, AT&T Stadium, Dallas Cowboys. Just booked the talked to the tour guy who books the tours for AT&T Stadium. We're actually going to pay up extra for a guided tour where they're going to take us everywhere. We're going to take a picture on the 50-yard line. We're going to go to the they're going to take us everywhere. We're going to go to the cheerleaders' dressing room. We're going to go to the Cowboys' dressing room. It's going to be a really memorable tours. You know, Dan and I always talk about the different tours and the different nuances, and this seems to be a very, very special one compared to, let's say, the one we did at Tropicana Field.
All due respect to the first-place Rays.
Yeah, well, that's temporary.
They're real.
They're a good team, but yeah, listen, Yankees, Red Sox. I mean, I don't think the Red Sox is going to finish at 54-108 or what. You know, they're not going to be in last place forever. So it should be interesting. And so that's that. You can always go to that 401ksite.com for further information about all these great events. I mean, you know, I get people last minute signing up. Two today for Atlanta, and that's tomorrow. And Kansas City, we just got. JP Morgan Chase is going to be a supporting sponsor, so it's a lot of fun, and I hope whatever your position is, whether you're a plan provider sponsor or advisor or whatever it is, to attend one of these events, and especially the national event, which is really open to everybody. Okay.
That's the national event's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be like it's going to be like Woodstock for 401k advisors. Well, I would say Woodstock because
it's very topical.
Well, the Woodstock, not the 69 event where they, where, you know, after a certain point they allowed everybody in for free, and certainly not the 99 event, which was that big riot at the end over there at the Air Force Base. Maybe the 94 event in Saugerties where Aerosmith did a pretty good set. I don't know. We'll see. So anyway, our topic for this week is talk about plan sponsors and TPA referrals and really the need to vet them, plan sponsors. And it's really a discussion about TPA referrals. And, you know, there's even some advice to financial advisors as well for giving TPA referrals. And, you know, it's a really big thing. And, you know, the problem that, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind is too many plan sponsors don't really know what the heck a TPA does. They don't realize that a TPA is probably the most important plan provider they can hire. You know, with due respect to the advisors that we work with, and, you know, I check my ego at the door. ERISA attorneys, I don't think that we're as important as TPAs. You know, they handle the day-to-day plan administration. They, you know, distributions, discrimination testing, asset reconciliation, government filings. You know, a lot of times they do the plan document. They do the bulk of the work. And it reminds me of that T-shirt, which if you go on my LinkedIn, you could probably find it. We'll probably sell it at the convention. It's, you know, I'm the TPA. I do all the work. I get none of the credit. I get all of the blame. And that's really what a TPA does. They do, I mean, you know, as a TPA, as a 316, you know, you do the small minutia stuff that's not very sexy, you know, like, you know, reconciling payroll.
Sure. We make the sausage is basically what we do. Right. And it's not the glamour, the most glamorous part. Right. I mean, we know that, but I think we're sort of the engine room, right, of a plan, and it's critically important to make sure that that's running smoothly, that you don't have issues. You know, things tend to snowball, right? And the one thing with a lot of errors in our business, the clock keeps running until you fix them. So it's important, and it could be really costly if you make the wrong decisions.
Exactly. So, you know, like I said, the TPA does the bulk of the work. When we're dealing with small to medium-sized plans, it's usually, you know, the issues that we see are not the class action lawsuits. What we usually see are the plan compliance errors. You know, there's no auditor in place on these plans, so there's no, you know, sort of check and balance. There's no risk attorney usually. So what happens is a TPA will make an error. And it's not discovered until there's like a plan audit by the government, or until there's a change of the TPA and the new TPA discovers these errors that have been taking place, and you know, they discover them. And the problem with discovering errors later down the line is it kind of closes out as to some of the fixes that you can make, probably increases corrective contributions, and of course, if it's discovered on an audit, you don't get the benefit of voluntary compliance, which the voluntary compliance programs have compliance fees that are a lot less, a lot more generous than you know, the fees and really penalties that are leveled by the IRS and or DOL. So, you know, that's why it's extremely important for a plan sponsor that whoever they're being referred to, they really have to understand what a TPA does before they actually act on any kind of referral. And you know, the other part that they don't understand is that really there are different levels of service that a TPA may offer. You know that as a, you know, a 316 with a TPA service. So there's a TPA, you know, offering a 316 service. There are some TPAs that offer a bare bones service. They don't really give any help whatsoever. That's always been my knock against, you know, ADP and Paychex. When it comes to the compliance end of it, they don't do a lot of hand holding with the client, who maybe doesn't understand what a key employee is, what a census is, what is, you know, what the, you know, the importance of a correct data for compliance purposes. And, you know, they really have to understand that they are different levels of service. And, you know, there are like three levels I would call it. I would call it TPA Lite, TPA Basic, and TPA Select. And TPA Lite, it's kind of like light beer. You know, it TPA Light, you know, maybe it has less filling, and I don't think it necessarily has a great taste. It's it offers little protection for the plan sponsor, minimizing their liability and compliance issues. They're bare bones level of service. You know, they issue the 5500 and pretty much nothing else. You know, sometimes they'll say, well, you know what, we didn't do the compliance testing because you didn't pay for it, which to me is like buying a car without a steering wheel. Or selling a car without a steering wheel. And there are TPAs that do that. I just got a compliance statement on a VCP for a client that was using, you know, one of the payroll providers, and they never bothered to do a ADP and ACP testing on the plan, and plan sponsor had to pay $70,000 in corrective contributions of a QNIC. And, you know, the TPA said, you know, well, you didn't give us the data. We didn't do the testing.
How many years was it on?
4 or 5 years.
That's nice.
that's nice, but, you know, again, the TPA is like, oh, well, you know, you didn't give us the information. Well, you know, any good TPA would have said, you know what, you don't give us information, you're fired.
Yeah, well, 5 years without saying anything, that's
exactly pretty egregious. Exactly. How do you do a 5,500 without doing the testing? I don't know, but, you know, they, you know, TPA Lite, I always say, is very busy in the prayer business because, you know, their bulk of their work, you know, you're praying that the IRS and the DOL isn't going to audit the plan. And, you know, it's really a problem because, you know, you're paying for a service and you just can't rely on it whatsoever. And it's not, as a plan sponsor, they're not providing that this, you know, the level of service that any decent plan sponsor or any plan sponsor that's not a TPA expert needs to have done. So, you know, that's a huge problem. And so that's TPA Lite. You know, the payroll, the larger payroll providers, some of these no-frills TPA services, they offer that as well. It's something I would avoid. But of course, if you are a company that, you know, for some reason has TPA experience, maybe that's a good fit. But for most plan sponsors, it's not. The next, you know, level to me is what I call TPA basic. You know, they complete all the basic services a plan sponsor really needs, the compliance testing, the 5500s. The TPA basic pretty much does 401k only, so any DB work, they probably farm it out. They usually don't have an ERISA attorney on site. They won't check the plan sponsor census of employees and verify data and payroll. They tend not to ask the plan sponsor for W-2 information, which I think is a big, big problem. Well, W-2 and W-3, and to see if it matches up. And that's a big problem because I see compensation as a very big corrective problem these days where the plan sponsor thinks that they should allow deferrals and make employer contributions on one set of compensation and then quite simply something the opposite. So, you know, TPA Basic doesn't have the level of services that, you know, really eliminate all compliance errors. They offer a basic level of service and... you know, any plan sponsor uses them needs to understand that they got to be really, really vigilant and understand what's going on.
No, agreed. And the definition of comp, to your point, is one of the things that comes up almost every year, right? Somebody is including something they shouldn't be. Somebody's excluding something that they shouldn't. It comes up frequently now. Now, luckily, you know, plans that have audits, plans that have, you know, 316 that run software like we do, that stuff typically gets caught before it's too big of an issue. But, you know, you mentioned earlier the great misfortune of ending up in an audit cap situation. You know, that could be really, really costly.
It's costly and it's,
excuse me.
It's costly and, you know, it's just a giant, giant, giant headache. And, you know, I've been through a lot of corrective matters, you know, and you know, stuff that takes like a year or two to fix. And, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money to hire an ERISA attorney, including yours truly. Even with my, reasonable fees, but, you know, it's something that I think many small, medium-sized businesses, you know, they really need that extra level of service. And, you know, for a lot, basic does work, and for a lot, basic doesn't work. And so that brings us to the TPA Select, to me, which is, you know, a TPA who, you know, either offers a 316 or, you know, if it doesn't, has a white glove level of service. You know, they do on-site actuary work. They review all data, census. Review W-2s, W-3s. They'll, you know, make sure the compensation is consistent with plan documents, operation, and, you know, actuality. They'll have an ERISA attorney on staff. And, you know, they're, you know, crafty in plan design issues, so a plan sponsor can maximize their savings through plan design. And, you know, that white glove level treatment is going to be more expensive than basic and services that are light. But, you know, there are fewer compliance issues, And it's just, you know, overall, it could be a better option for most plan sponsors out there.
Yeah, and this sort of popped into my head when we were talking about the class previous to Select. Some of the a good TPA that does your document work, or a good TPA that has an ERISA attorney to do your document work, that should tie directly into that definition of comp, right? And generally, you want to simplify that so you avoid errors. So I guess my point is, a lot of the upfront work in terms of the plan design, if that's done properly and tailored, customized to the needs of the client, and reviewed, right? Because businesses do change, business needs change from time to time, so that's sort of an ongoing process. If that's dressed vigilantly and competently, a lot of those sort of subsequent issues that come up or could come up are avoided. You know, they're dealt with before it even becomes an issue or a concern.
Exactly.
So, I mean, really, and we've recently adopted this process where I have Ari do all of our documents, you know, and the idea there is to ensure we don't have issues that come up later, right? The docs are customized to the clients, and we sleep well at night knowing that there aren't going to be subsequent issues down the road.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's important that, you know, plan sponsors, you know, really understand what they're contracting with and what they're getting and what, you know, what's not necessarily a good fit. And, one time I worked with a union, you had a certified employee benefit specialist on staff. They obviously would need less of a service than a, you know, electrical contracting firm where there's nobody on site, and maybe no HR director that could help things through. So everything is really based on facts and circumstances as to what fits and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic problem with vetting TPA referrals is understanding, in my opinion, the changing part of the business. Because, you know, 30 years ago or 35 years ago, before participant-directed 401k plans came into existence, you know, DB plans were more of the defined benefit plans were more of the tool out there. 401k plans less so. And if they were 401k plans 35 years ago, you weren't doing participant directed because you really didn't have the infrastructure to do it. It was more of a trustee directed. And in those days, the referrals for TPAs usually came from attorneys and CPAs who, you know, for most part are professionals that understand the liability issues connected with poor administration. And of course, these days, referrals are made mostly by financial advisors and retirement plan wholesalers, and these are people that may not be have the greatest experience in determining who's a competent TPA and who's not. We have a lot of advisors out there who only recommend one TPA, and the only reason is because that TPA works on, you know, all the advisors' plans. And you know, the problem is too many advisors and wholesalers think that a TPA is just a price point. They don't understand that there's a service behind it. They're not just a placeholder for a fee. They don't know what a TPA does. They don't understand what a bad TPA does. And, you know, it's not a commodity. It's a service. And there is a level of service, and there are varying levels of service. And, some TPAs are better than others. So, you know, it's really important for the plan sponsor to, you know, vet the referral. Check them out. Just don't take the advisor's word for it, the wholesaler's word for it, or even the ERISA attorney who might have made the recommendation. Don't just go on, you know, it's like the Facebook news groups. If you only want to see how – I always say that I always thought I lived in a normal place until I went on the Facebook community groups. And you'll have people, you know, ask for referrals and, you know, oh, so-and-so, I need somebody to do my driveway. And a friend of mine will say, oh, Dominic. But what she doesn't say is Dominic is her husband. And, you know, when you're asking perfect strangers for referrals, you don't know where that referral is based on. Sure. You know, advisor, you hope it's a little bit better than that, and usually it is. But, you know, any referral to a service provider, you got to vet it. I mean, we've gone through the Matt Hutchinsons of the world, Vantage Benefits, you know, speaking of TPAs. Vetting is a very, very big deal. Referrals are always problematic because you don't sometimes know what they're based on. You know, usually when I'm asked for a TPA referral, I'll give at least 3 referrals because I don't want to be seen as somebody who says, oh, just go to this one. Let the plan sponsor or let the advisor vet out of the 3 which one is really the best fit, both financially and, you know, service-wise. So, you know, that's where I see it.
Agreed. And the only thing that I'd add is make sure that if you have an advisor that's vetting it out, that advisor knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right? Not all advisors in this business are remotely created equally. You know, there are quite a few folks that do this full time and understand all the ins and outs, the value that a good TPA brings both to their practice and their clients. And they're a crap ton that don't. And you want to make sure if you're going to rely on that referral from that advisor that you're getting a good lead, right? You don't want to end up in a worse situation because you followed some questionable advice.
Exactly. And you know that's just been, you know, that's a really big problem. And you know, I've seen so many plan sponsors just, you know, take a recommendation or a referral, whether it's sometimes it's from the accountant or the advisor, and it blows up in their face. And had they bothered to vet it a little bit more, they would have avoided a really big problem. So it's extremely important for, you know, plan sponsors to vet any referrals that they get and, you know, understand what the referrals are, you know, where the referrals are coming from. And, you know, the difference between hiring a good TPA and a bad TPA is the difference between having great plan administration and nothing but compliance headaches.
Agreed. Entirely.
So I think we hit the head on that topic for this week.
That went by fast. That was really enjoyable.
Well, you know, vetting, you really got to look around and see who's being recommended. Can't just take somebody's word for it. I've seen it too many times when it's come to using contractors in my house, how recommendations aren't really good. And when it comes to my wife, I've made a couple of lawyer. I've gotten a couple of lawyer referrals that didn't pan out as well. So,
well, so in that vein, and I will only say this because I know for a fact my wife doesn't listen to the show. She does the same thing with basically every. So long story short, I screwed a bunch of crap up. I got the wrong folks here. Did everything that we said that we shouldn't do. I did. When we first bought the house, we overpaid for a bunch of crap, and she just lords it over me like you know, no one's business. So anyway, I've ceded all control of that, and. She just does a bang up job. I mean, she will shop until she finds a guy that does the work for what she wants and has some sort of, you know, verification, something demonstrable that shows the quality of their work before she engages anything. And again, I'm only saying this because she won't listen, but she does a great job. You know, there are times where I have disagreements with her and inevitably lose. But since you brought up contractors, I thought I'd share with our listening audience.
Yeah, I mean, I've had to sue one. I've made complaints for another couple. And, you know, and the good ones have flaked out. So thankfully, for the time being, I don't need any home improvements for a while now. So, which is, thank God.
Thank God. Absolutely.
Okay, until next week, same podcast, topics, I guess.
So. Guys, enjoy the Masters, the baseball, and we'll see you guys next week.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.